just be glad to be here. If the only prayer you ever uttered was thank you, that would be enough. If thank you ran through your mind at all times. Take a deep breath. We're going to exhale with a long ah. And when you're ready, open your eyes. I mentioned in our introduction that I've had two things that keep coming to me during meditation. One was that we should do this. And the second is sort of my next great adventure. I have a book coming out later this year, and so I'm finishing the editing of that, and then I'm like, okay, God, now what? Now what? You know? And I've got ideas. Do you have ideas? I have ideas. I have lots of ideas. You know? And so I want to say, God, I want to do this, and I think this is great. And da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And everything I'm bringing up, I'm sort of getting in meditation, in my opinion, from God, this feeling of, eh. Everything I'm coming up with, eh. So I did something bold. I said, okay, God, what do you think? And here's what I got. Where we are right now is not too far from the geographic center of the United States. Which is, anybody know? Lebanon, Kansas is the, no, Jeannie knows. Lebanon, Kansas is the geographic center of the lower 48 United States. Now, it's really interesting how they discovered that Lebanon, Kansas was the geographic center. All of these scientists and cartographers, which mean map makers, got together and they wanted to figure out the exact center of the United States. At that point, this was before Alaska and Hawaii. And so they did what most people would do. They took a map and they glued it to a piece of cardboard. And they put it on a pin to see where it would balance. I kid you not. These scientists, all advanced degrees, decided, well, let's see if it'll balance. And that's how we got Lebanon, Kansas, as the geographic center of the United States. And I said, okay, well, God, that's interesting. Now what? And God said, I want you to go document, participate in 50 diverse spiritual experiences within 300 miles of the geographic center of the United States. So I asked my friend John Gladman, who is six-time Kansas State Photographer of the Year, as well as in the top 1% of all photographers out of 50,000 in the nation, if he would join me on this. And so we set off. So over the last week, I have been a Hindu, I have been a Buddhist, I have been Episcopalian, and I have been a Catholic. And this whole series, and I'm actually starting a series today, today is number one of five, came to me because Marty was researching the Yamas of Hinduism. And like a great spiritual scholar that I am, I said, what is that? And when she explained it to me and I started looking at them, I realized that five of the 10 yamas, which is like the 10 commandments for Hindus, five of the 10 Hindu yamas are in the Jewish Christian 10 commandments. And I thought, well now, wow, isn't that kind of interesting? So then I started looking at Buddhism and I found that basically four of the five appear as the five basic precepts of Buddhism. There's a lot of laws out there. Would you agree? There's a lot of you shalt nots. And yet for some reason in these diverse communities, you know, when I say Hindu, you know what a Hindu is. You probably know one. When I say Buddhist, you probably know one. These people had no contact. They had no idea that there were people of other faiths around the world whatsoever. And yet five of these 10 came together. And so I was looking at this, and originally my talk was going to be called A Jew, a Buddhist, and a Hindu Walk into a Bar. But then I thought we would just stay with the five great universal truths. So what I'm going to be doing is, over the next 5 weeks, I'm going to be sharing with you these five little laws and how they ended up being in the basic teachings of these religions. Now, you can look at the histories of religions, and understandably, religion actually, if there is one religion in a culture, which is typically, by the way, there's never been a discovery of human beings, a society of people, that did not have a God. Let me say that again. There has never been a group of atheists that have got together and have built a society. Okay, now what happens is when the society grows, people tend to disagree and they go off and start their own. There are over 25,000 different varieties of Christianity in the world today, and three times as many different varieties of Buddhists. So these people had no connection with each other. The religion was to hold the community together, so it implied ethics. But more importantly, it couldn't just be an or else, it had to be a, this is the key to enlightenment. This brings you happiness. So as I share this with you, don't think about them as God looking down at you going, These were devised by spiritual people who said, this is how to be a more enlightened and therefore a more happy person, a more spiritual person. The word enlightened simply means awake. There's a saying that Gautama Buddha was walking down the road and someone came up to him and said, are you an ascetic? And he said, no. And they said, are you a holy man? And he said, no. They said, what are you? He said, I'm awake. I'm awake. So many people in our culture are asleep. They're asleep to their minds, they're asleep to their bodies, and they're asleep to their spirits. And by waking up, we're happier. So what is the first of these five great truths? Well, before I share it with you, I want to tell you that I got to sit in an Indian puja at a Hindu temple. Puja is a sacred experience. It's like the Eucharist, basically, except instead of you eating God, God is eating, because they have a little statue. And they believe that the traits of that particular deity fill this little statue. And then they give the statue flowers and yogurt and honey. And the idea is that the statue gets more and more nourished, and then those attributes come into you. So I participated with that with a Hindu priest on Thursday. Then on Friday, I went to an Episcopal cathedral and I did the Eucharist. And then I left there very quickly and went and did Mass at a Catholic basilica. These were in Des Moines, Iowa, and Omaha, Nebraska. These are the first cities that we've gone to. And the next morning I got up and I was thinking about these men and women who hold the light for their spiritual centers, and I wrote something. So I'd like to share that with you, if I may. Something that I wrote, sort of as my homage to them. I wrote, what I'm discovering is that while I'm in the presence of these holy men and women, people just like me, human just like me, questioning uncertain people who present their faith as a way of remembering it themselves, when I'm in the presence of these people who have made their calling their vocation, when I'm in the presence of these men and women who must not only honor and serve God, but must deal many times with boards, building maintenance issues, fundraising, and more. When I listen to them read and recite their practice lines, lines that they have no doubt said thousands of times, I feel a feeling that I can only describe as love struck. Something deep inside of me sees, understands, and yields to who they are. All resistance that comes from typical human judgments and observations melts, and I behold radiance, a transcendence that I feel they themselves may not even see. But I see. No more. I sense it. I know it. My heart beats with their heart. They are my beloved. More people have died in the name of God than for all other reasons combined. And yet what most religions agree on is that God is love. And so as we look at this series, I'd like for us to consider setting aside our preconceptions of other religions and just be open to what it is that they have to say. So the first thing that appears in all five of these has to do with not killing or not harming. So we're going to look at the five yamas of Patanjali. I'll give you a real quick history of this stuff, and then we'll get into why in the world you should care, because that's what's important to you, I know. But I also know some of you, like me, like a little bit of history. The five yamas of Patanjali, symbolized by the Om sign. Patanjali is believed to have lived in the second or third century. Some people believe that Patanjali himself did not exist. Some believe that he was an amalgamation of people. Back in the second and third century in India, yoga was very, very popular. Yoga has been popular for thousands of years, but because of the caste system, yoga was considered vulgar by the higher end people, the Brahmins, the priests, and so only the lower class. But Patanjali loved it and wrote about it and promoted yoga and lived yoga so much, it became contagious and other people caught it. Does this sound like anybody y'all know? And as a result, we have yoga today, thanks to Patanjali. Now, what Patanjali did was he looked at the yamas of Hinduism, and he took them from 10 down to 5. If you want to have some fun, go YouTube George Carlin on the 10 Commandments and see what he does with them. He takes them from 10 down to 2. Well, Patanjali takes them from 10 down to 5. Then we look at the five precepts of Buddhism. Now, these are basically the given understandings. These are not considered to be commandments in any way. You know why? Enlightened beings don't need commandments. And that's what the Buddhists say. So this is not about trying to remind people who are enlightened how to live. This is trying to remind, the rest of us how to live. And that's what the five precepts of Buddhism are all about. And by the way, Buddhism is not about worshiping any deity or God. And Hinduism has so many gods that it's hard to know who to worship. But they worship Brahma. Brahma is their main god. Then we've got Judaism. We've got the Ten Commandments. We've heard about the Ten Commandments, haven't we? Whenever there's a debate regarding anything having to do with life or death in this country, we haul out the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments, and then finally, of course, Christianity. This, to me, was interesting as I went looking at what Jesus wrote and what is attributed to Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus talks about three of the five. So we're going to talk about that. Here's the first one. Don't kill. Don't kill. Don't kill. Thou shalt not kill. It all depends on which particular faith you're looking at or which one you're reading it from. But in Buddhism, they say, I undertake the training rule to abstain from taking life. Isn't that great? Each one of the Buddhist precepts are training rules. Not a commandment. Not a thou shalt not. It's a training rule, man. You're in training. Okay? So see how you do to be in training. Being this way. The Buddhists, you know, how do you know? We're still deciding this. How do you know when someone is dead? We're constantly going to court about that. How do you know? The Buddhists put it very simple thousands of years ago. Cause not that which is breathing to stop breathing. That's it. Most Buddhists tend to be vegetarians or vegans, as do most Hindus. So the Buddhists recommend take on the training rule of not killing. Now in the five yamas of Patanjali, it is called ahimsa, which means non-harming. And Patanjali goes further. I love this. Be gentle with yourself and all creation. Who do we tend to forget sometimes most as far as being gentle with? You know? Exactly. We got to be nice to everybody else or they won't put up with it. But we can be just as inhospitable and mean and ornery as to ourselves as we want. And unfortunately, our lives reflect that because it impacts our core belief about ourselves. Non-harming, ahimsa. Judith Lasseter, the great yoga teacher, said that her guru taught that ahimsa comes from the Sanskrit himsa, which means lion, and which negates it. Don't be like a lion. Don't be like a lion. Don't growl in people's face. Let me ask you a question. If a lion growls in your face, are you breathing or probably not breathing? Probably not breathing. Don't get into other people's faces. Don't yell at them. Don't cause them not to breathe. This isn't about just stopping death, stopping about not causing death. This is about not causing the death of a person's spirit. Your spirit. Their spirit. You know, here we are for a cultural reference, and we sit here in any hotel we go to, we're going to open the drawer by the bed, and we're going to find a copy of I thought you were going to say the Bhagavad Gita. Yeah, the Bible. We find the Bible and we open it up and it says in Exodus, thou shalt not kill, and therefore we think it means thou shalt not kill. Well, no. Probably the one that takes the least firm stance on non-killing is Judaism and Christianity, because when you went to temple in ancient Israel, ancient Judaism, Jerusalem, you took an animal to be slaughtered on an altar. That's what an altar was. It was a place of slaughter. Okay, thou shalt not kill, and yet that's what the priests do. Culturally, it meant you shall not kill a male of your own tribe. That's okay. Don't wait till we get into adultery. You shall not kill a male of your own tribe. You know why? Because he is human. Everyone else is not. What is the first thing we do when we go to war with someone else? We have to dehumanize them to legitimize killing them. We have to make them non-human. So what I love is that in our present context, we're looking at ancient Jewish teachings, and we're looking at it, and we're ascribing modern values to it, which is a good thing. Which is a good thing to look at this and say, thou shalt not kill. Because when you kill, it's that energy of killing that gets imprinted into you. You are less happy. Now, what did Jesus Christ say? In the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5:21, he said, you have heard that it was said of them of old time, thou shalt not kill, and whoever shall kill shall be in danger of the judgment. But I say unto you that whosoever is angry with his brother without cause shall be in danger of the judgment. It's not often that people kill each other without first being a little angry at each other first? Would you agree? Happens, but those are usually called accidents. Intentionals usually happen because we're unhappy and we disagree with the other person. And of course, God is on our side, so it's okay. Every time I speak, people come up to me and say, oh, I loved when you said such and such. And I say, I don't remember saying such and such. But that's what you heard because that's what you needed to hear. So my question is, based on what I've shared with you this morning, what do you need to hear? What is God telling you? Are you killing your own spirit? Are you slowly committing suicide by the things that you say to yourself or the things that you do or do not do to yourself? Are you killing the spirit possibly of other people, your children, your parents, the people you work with? Or is there just wonderful life? There's a story in the Vedas. The Vedas are sacred Hindu texts, one of tens of thousands. And in this particular story, there is a traveling monk who goes and visits a town. And he is a Hindu monk, and when he's there, the people are terrorized because there's a giant snake that is scaring everybody. And so they ask the monk to intercede, and so he goes out to where the snake is, and he sits with the snake, and he tells them of the wonderful transformative benefit of non-harming, of ahimsa, not harming. And the snake takes this in, and the next year the monk comes back to the very same village, and he finds the snake, and the snake is skinny, and he's bruised. And the monk says, "What happened to you?" He said, "I took in what you said about not hurting other people." And he said, "So everyone in town knows that no matter what happens, I'm not going to kill them." And so now the little boys come out and they chase me and they throw sticks at me and they hit me with stones. And the monk said, "It was my mistake. I taught you that it was not okay to kill. But I forgot to teach you that it's okay to hiss." This isn't about being a doormat. It's okay to hiss. It's okay to stand up for yourself. Dr. King hissed. Gandhi hissed. Jesus Christ hissed. Go read the Gospels. He was constantly saying, "How much longer should I have to put up with you?" And these are the 12 people he picked. But you know what they didn't do? None of them. They didn't kill. They didn't kill. They didn't harm. So whatever non-harming, whatever non-killing is speaking to you, honor that part and know that that is a path that is taking you to enlightenment and to happiness. Take somebody's hand and let's close in prayer. Dear God, thank you for the teachings of the people of the past who have distilled down and discovered that which is going to make us happier, healthier, and stronger. Thank you, God, for this opportunity to come together and to share and to celebrate, to expand our minds, stretch our bodies, and tap more deeply into our spirit. And so it is. Amen. Thank you for listening. I hope you find this to be a blessing in your life. If you do, be sure and podcast these broadcasts. That is, set your device, your phone, your iPad, your computer to automatically receive these. You can do it through iTunes or you can do it through podbean.com. Go to willbowen.podbean.com and subscribe. Have a great week. I look forward to talking to you real soon. You can connect with me at will@willbowen.com. Have a great day. Bye-bye.